Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, of course, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney, who's with the Institute of the Constitution, and we're going to be talking about this most amazing form of government that we have here in the United States. A form of government that really was, at one time, was the envy of the entire world. Of course, there's always been those who would establish a dictatorship, or those who would want to rule over others, and gradually, little by little, they've eroded away these concepts of limited government, and we've replaced it in many ways with an all-powerful ruling elite, but certainly in the court system, which was one of the means by which we would be able to regulate government, by having an independent jury that could act and determine not only what the facts of the case, but whether the law was just or not. And yet, of course, they've tried to restrict that so that they could have the judges determine the outcome of the case. And it really didn't matter what the jury believed. The judge, in his instructions, would ensure that the person would be convicted or released, depending upon what the judge thought. And we would then be able to neutralize the influence of the citizens on the all-powerful elite. Well, David's going to talk a little bit more about this, the concepts, and how these concepts of the jury have been altered through the years. David Whitney, thank you so very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan, for having me on your show. It's always a privilege to be with you, as well as your great listening audience.
Well, why don't you go ahead and pick up the story tonight?
Well, we've been talking about what all of English history, and all the way back to Magna Carta, and even before that probably, but clearly the idea of a jury trial was a trial in which the jury was the judge of the law as well as the facts. They were to determine if the law itself was legitimate, and having determined if it is not legitimate, then of course the person brought into the bar, the person accused, is innocent no matter what the facts are, because the law itself is guilty. If, of course, the law itself is legitimate, then they could go ahead and look at the facts to determine if indeed the facts proved innocence or guilt.
And, of course, basically what you're talking about is jury nullification, which at one time was accepted in this country, but the elite who've taken over our judicial system don't believe that. They want, of course, the judge to be all-powerful, just as they want the bureaucracy to be all-powerful, just as they want the executive branch of government to be all-powerful. And the last thing they want is the people who are, of course, paying the taxes and supporting the government to have anything at all to say about the outcome of jury trials. So pick up the story there, please.
Well, our founders never referred in detail to what it meant when they used the term jury trial, because in their day, everybody understood a jury trial is one in which the jury judges the law as well as judges the facts. And so when you look at our Constitution, people would argue, and they do argue today, well, look, there's nothing in here about the jury judging the law. There are in various other writings. There is in, for example, the Maryland State Constitution and several other state constitutions, a clear expression that a true jury trial is one in which the jury judges the law and as well as the facts. But we want to trace what happened in America, because at that day, at the founding era, it was so taken for granted that they didn't even need to spell it out. A jury trial, by definition, meant a trial in which the jury was the judges of the law as well as the facts. That's not the case today, and we want to, in this program, trace the history of what took place to change the way in which juries handle trials in our land.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with David Whitney, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. And so the Institute supports Radio Liberty, and we support the Institute. David, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, the value that our founders set upon the jury trial is expressed in a number of different ways. Let me just cite to you what Alexander Hamilton said in Federalist Paper number 83. He said, the friends and adversaries of the plan, that is, of the Constitution, so you take the Federalists, who are the advocates of the Constitution, as well as the Anti-Federalists, both groups, if they agree on nothing else, Hamilton said, concur at least in the value they set upon the trial by jury. For if there is any difference between them, it consists of this. The former, that is the Federalists, regard it as a valuable safeguard to liberty. The latter, that is the Anti-Federalists, represent it as the very palladium of free government. So in a sense, the Anti-Federalists held it even a little higher, that it's the essence of free government. If you think about that, in no way, shape, or form today is the jury held in such high esteem, in such an elevated and lofty position as the very palladium, the very essence of free government. Instead, the juries are reduced to a standard level in most courtrooms, and there may be some exceptions, but in almost all the courtrooms that I've ever heard of in our day, the jury is reduced to almost being a simple rubber stamp for whatever it is the government wants. That is, whatever the prosecutor may have determined already, or perhaps what the judge himself has determined, and he's going to manipulate the evidence to see what they are exposed to, what they are not exposed to. He's going to control what arguments are allowed to be presented to the jury, and also prevent the attorneys from arguing points that he does not want them to argue. All of this is then in the hands of a black-robed lawyer, and not in the hands of 12 jurors, honest jurors, who are of your vicinity. And given that this is exactly what our founders feared, that a judge would be in control of the proceeding and a judge would be the determiner of the outcome, how in the world did we come to this place today where we're almost 180 degrees opposite from what our founders established and what their vision of a true jury trial was all about? Well, it took place primarily in the 19th century, and then even further in the 20th century. But in the 19th century, there was a slow erosion that began of the clear understanding of what our founders intended with a jury trial. And it's interesting to see where this erosion took place. It didn't take place in the legislature. That is, Congress as well as state legislatures didn't sit down and begin writing laws that restricted the jury and prevented the jury from functioning as it should to judge the law. Nor was it the executive branch, whether the president and his office and his departments that are under him. Nor
hold that thought right there, David. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Pastor David Whitney, and he's certainly tracing the history of this movement in the 18th century, I should say in the 19th century, and then in the early 20th century, to neutralize the power of the jury, to centralize the power in the hands of the black-robed lawyer we call a judge. And, of course, this is an honest man, fine, but what if it's not an honest man? What if he is part of a system that wants to determine the outcome of trials and simply uses the framework of the jury to justify his preconceived notion? The judge should only be certainly acting there as a mediator, not a determinant of what's right and wrong, but of course the judge says what information can be presented to the jury will restrict many times information that's really very important as far as the trial is concerned. And so, but how did we get from where we were to where we are today, to where no longer is the jury allowed to interpret the law, to even try to understand the law, to nullify the law, jury nullification? How do we get to the point where the jury simply becomes a rubber stamp for a black-robed lawyer? Go right ahead, David.
And as I was mentioning earlier, it wasn't the legislative branch that made the change. It wasn't specific pieces of legislation they put forward, nor was it the executive branch, either on the national level with the president and his departments, nor on the state level with the governor and his powers. Those two branches of government did not change the jury system in America. It was the judiciary. We're going to cite a number of court cases that are examples of the erosion that began to take place in the 19th century and accelerated towards the end of that century and into the 20th. But it's interesting if you look at not only our federal constitution, but you look at every state constitution, all 50 constitutions, they have a means for amending their constitution. That is, the structure of government that was laid down at the beginning can be changed. But the method of changing the structure of government, the method of changing the Constitution, is always by an amendment process, usually a difficult, especially on the federal level, a very challenging process to get three-quarters of the states to go along with the proposed amendment. And so it is a very high bar that must be passed to amend the federal Constitution, and the same with the state Constitution. A vast number of citizens have to vote in the state to change the Constitution. In other words, the Constitution can never be changed by the government or any government functionaries or government agents. In fact, the legislature really can't change it, nor the executive branch, let alone the judicial branch. None of those branches by themselves can change it. They have to appeal to the people, and the people have to weigh in and vote either on a state level for a federal amendment or within a state itself for an amendment to a state constitution. The people are the only ones, because we live in a system that rightly recognizes that government is by consent of the governed. If we don't agree to a change in our form of government, that change is illegal. And so if one branch or even three branches of government were to collude together to change the form of government or change even one aspect of it, they do not have the power to do so. It is illegal for them to do so. It's what our founders called usurpation, that they've stepped outside the boundaries and the system that has been set up for right governance. And so for the judicial branch, as we'll illustrate here, for the judicial branch to be the one branch that changed the function of the jury from what it was in our founding era to something entirely different by the time you come to the 20th century is illegal. These people were breaking the law and getting away with breaking the law primarily because those charged with being the watchdogs over the judicial branch, which is the legislative branch, both on the federal level and the state level, if there's going to be an impeachment of judges who are violating the law by violating their oath of office, it's the legislature that has to impeach them and then remove them from office. And in each one of these cases, no, that did not happen. These judges got away with violating the law, got away with changing the form of government, particularly what a jury is and how it functions in the judicial branch, and they got away with it, and they furthermore propagandized the entire country to a point today where most Americans believe that, oh, jury nullification, oh, that's a bad thing. I saw somebody sent me a clip from one of the Law and Order shows, I think it was, but anyway, the whole point of the show was to say that that juror who dared breathe the idea, even the idea of jury nullification was completely out of order and needed to be thrown off the jury because jury nullification is illegal, which is a flat-out lie. But the lie has been successfully told so that most Americans, in spite of the fact that they were to study the history of our country, if they were to study the history of English common law from Magna Carta on down, they would know that the role of the jury is critically important, that they must judge the law as well as judge the facts.
And I think it's important, David, for our listeners to understand that programs like Law and Order, which I enjoy thoroughly, but programs like Law and Order are largely there to create a reality and to distort, of course, the truth and to get us to believe what the establishment wants us to believe. And certainly the major networks, television networks, are controlled by the people who control everything else, and they will certainly put an idea into a program to alter our concept, and ultimately our ideas are molded, our thoughts are monitored, our tastes are formed by people we don't even understand. How they use television, how they use motion pictures, how they use radio and articles and magazines and newspapers to alter our concept of the world. Jury nullification is the law of the land, and of course the fact most people don't know that, and the fact that the Law and Order program would say it was not simply reflects the fact that they are creating our reality. It's about time we were able to think independently. Jury nullification was one of the basic tenets of American law until, of course, the people in control decided to change that. Go right ahead.
Well, one of the first cases that was a shot across the bow of the independent jury was the United States v. Batista in the year 1835, and it was actually held a case held in Massachusetts. It was a case on the high seas, so it went to federal court, a case that involved questions of piracy, questions of mutiny, and so on a slave ship, and whether the slaves had a right to mutiny because they were unjustly and against the law of God enslaved. And so there was a strong abolition movement already there in Massachusetts where people would question a law that says the slave does not have a right to rise up and throw off their shackles on a slave ship and take over the slave ship and do away with the captain and the other crew and sail the ship themselves. You know, so many people on a jury in Massachusetts at that point in time, 1835, would say, wait a minute, that law is very, very questionable, highly questionable, because slavery itself is highly questionable, and we're not so certain that the slave, therefore, would be guilty. The man who ultimately became Chief Justice of the United States, Joseph Story, and there's many, many good things Joseph Story has done, so I wouldn't want to denigrate his character altogether, but in this case, United States v. Batista, he was wrong, because he argued this. He said that it was up to the, quote, educated judge to give the law to the uninformed jury, and up to the jury to decide the facts. So he's drawing a line down the middle of the courtroom and saying the professional here, who's wearing the black robe, the professional who's trained in law, this is the one who can tell the uneducated, unwashed, ignorant mass out of which we've drawn these 12 jurors. That judge is the one who's going to tell the jurors what the law is, and they have no right or no ability to judge whether a law is just or unjust. Joseph Story was absolutely wrong in this case. He's absolutely wrong. The entire weight of English common law rests against him. The entire weight of our own history, colonial history in America, all the way up until the time independence, because in the Declaration of Independence, 5 of the 28 reasons for declaring independence had to do with the king's violation of an Englishman's right to a trial by jury, which meant, of course, a trial by which the jury judges the law. So he was wrong, but he fired an initial shot, and of course, because he rose, instead of being impeached, instead of being thrown out of a position, he rose. He rose all the way up to Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and so people look back at the decisions of somebody who rises to that level as, wow, these are weighty, these are important, we ought to consider what they have to say. A few years later, in 1843, also in New England, in this case, it was a state case in New Hampshire in 1843, Pierce v. State was another watershed case in how it treated the jury. And in this case, very clearly, the distinct purpose of jury independence was overlooked entirely. You see, jury independence serves to protect the accused from injustice and oppression on the part of the government. Of course, the whole purpose of a trial, a jury trial to begin with, is to see that justice is done, and normally we think, well, it's one person who's done some wrong to another person, he's stolen their goods, he's murdered their person, or, you know, he's done some crime against another individual, and therefore the weight of government needs to come to punish him. But what happens when the government becomes the criminal? That is, the government steps outside the bounds of law, and the government violates the God-given rights of the individual. The entire purpose of an independent jury is to determine when that's happening, and say, wait a minute, the government here is violating the law, which is exactly what our founders did with the Declaration of Independence. Although it wasn't a courtroom, they were appealing to the opinions of the world, and although it wasn't a judicial trial and so forth, they were saying, we have gone through a process, and we, the people here in these 13 colonies, have determined that the king and his government have violated God's law, the laws of nature and nature's God, and therefore we have a right to resist and separate from such a government and form a government which will do justice according to the laws of nature and nature's God.
All right, fine. Well, our guest, of course, is Pastor David Whitney. We're going to be back here in just a moment as we begin to explore these ideas that have gradually led us away from our heritage, our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our freedom. David, go right from there.
Okay, well, that was in 1843, Pierce v. State, one of the watershed cases. Shortly after that, in 1845, and over in Massachusetts, another state case, Commonwealth v. Porter, Commonwealth v. Porter in 1845. In this case, the Chief Justice of the state of Massachusetts, Lemuel Shaw, held that although the defense...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Convict a man on a law which we feel is wrong. And so here was the means of nullifying law, at least as far as this one case. We have the legislative process to change the law, but as it applied to this one case, the jury could intervene to declare the innocence of an individual. So pick up the story there, David.
And so here was a case where it was being argued that, sure, jury independence and nullification is fine when the law is popular, but when it's unpopular, they do not have the right to get involved in determining the law, whether it's legitimate or not. And, of course, that completely undercuts the whole purpose of jury independence in the first place. If it's a popular law, there's no need for jury independence in that sense. It's only when it's an unpopular law that this is the way in which the people can resist oppression and tyranny and injustice on the part of the government. Well, a few years later, in 1860, and this is significant because you can see the rapid change that took place in our country after this point in time in the 19th century, and of course the big event that took place just then and there was the War for Southern Independence, where the southern states said, wait a minute, just as our original 13 colonies declared independence from England, we're declaring independence, and basically for the same reasons. We believe the government is unjust, the government's tyrannical and oppressive, and we are separating from it. It was not about slavery, and I can prove that by just looking at Lincoln's first inaugural address, where he says he has no intention of touching the institution of slavery. Well, the big thing that began to change was government grew gargantuan in size following this terrible, terrible war. But this case that was right on the cusp of that in Vermont, State v. McDowell, 1860, here the trial judge used his own discretion to decide how much of a role jury independence was to play in that case. In other words, he could say, I'll allow you to be independent in this area, but not in this area. You know, the judge took control of how much or in what way jury independence was going to be practiced in that particular case. And that's a dangerous, dangerous shift. Because if you think about it, it seems likely that jury independence would be most disparaged and abused by the judge in precisely the case in which it is needed most. So why should we trust a judge who's an employee of the government, whose entire career is dependent on people in the government? Why would we trust him with justice and not trust 12 independent jurors who really have no stake, they have no career to advance, they have no accolades or finances that are going to come to them as a result of playing the game in the government? These are 12 independent jurors that are brought in for this particular trial. When it's over, they're done and they're out. Actually, when you look at a courtroom, the only people in the courtroom who have no self-interest in the outcome of that case are the 12 jurors in the jury box. The trial attorney, the defense attorney, everybody in the court, including the judge himself, has a vested interest in terms of their own career and their own paycheck with what happens in that courtroom. The 12 jurors, it does not matter to them whether the trial goes one way or the other. It will not make a difference in their own career. Well, then, after the War for Southern Independence in 1869, we have another case, and this is in New Hampshire, State v. Hodge. And it's interesting here because they admit something in rejecting it. They go back to the watershed case of Pierce, which was in 1843, Pierce v. State back in New Hampshire, and they cite the case Pierce and assert that Pierce is now the standard. But it's interesting that they admit that before Pierce, before that case in 1843, jurors had been the rightful judges of the law as well as judges of the facts in criminal cases. So while they deny it, they admit that Pierce was the watershed. After that, everything changed, and now juries no longer judge the law. That's the job for the professionals, for the judges. And so it's an interesting admission. These people are admitting their own guilt, that they have transformed and changed the judicial system from a true trial by jury to the jury now being manipulated, controlled, and essentially just becoming a rubber stamp of what the judge and the government, perhaps the prosecutors want. But it's interesting that they had actually admitted. They admit that they have brought about a change, and if you know constitutional law, you know that the change they brought about is illegal because the judiciary cannot amend the Constitution. They cannot change the law. They have no power. They have no right to do so. And when they do so, they should be punished by impeachment.
Well, our guest this evening, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. We're going to be back here in just a moment to continue to explore this whole idea of jury nullification. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course our guest is Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution, simply taking us through step by step as the judges and the judicial system began to increase its own power and to relegate the jury to a very inconsequential, unimportant format where the jurors would simply do what they were told to by the judge. So pick the story up there.
Well, following that war for Southern independence, things began to move even more rapidly, particularly as the consolidation of power in Washington, D.C. began, as well as in states. And it became more and more standard to prohibit juries from even allowing the thought of jury nullification to be part of what they were allowed to hear. For example, if we go on to 1891, in this case, Commonwealth v. McManus, this is in the state of Pennsylvania, actually, this case, Commonwealth v. McManus, claimed that, quote, the court was the best evidence of the law within the jury's reach. The jury are not judges of the law in any case, civil or criminal. There they laid it down as an absolute. No jury nullification in any criminal or civil cases. The jury does not judge the law whatsoever. And so, in less than 100 years, from 1835, the Bautista case of Chief Justice Story, to 1891, you have a complete reversal, a complete change of the jury system. And we'll cite some other cases because it's interesting to see that even these, when they are honest, they have to admit that before that, before 1830s, juries were the judge of the law. But after that, we have changed the system. And so even in some of these cases where they talk about it, they admit that a change has entered the picture, and the history shows this the judiciary that has accomplished that change. So Commonwealth v. McManus, it was a bold, flat-out statement. Juries are no longer in functioning like they were designed to. The next year, 1892, another case in Vermont. This is State v. Burpee. And here, the judge claimed that the jury law judging was, quote, neither sound in principle nor salutary in practice, and was against the weight of authority. Now here they become extremely bold in their lie, because the weight of authority is the exact opposite of what they're saying. That is, if you take the weight of authority prior to 1830, take the weight of authority all the way back to Magna Carta, 1215, and probably even before Magna Carta, but Magna Carta is the first place we have a very clear written standard established of a trial by jury where the jury judges the law.
Well, you're going to have to hold that thought right there, David. We'll be back in just a moment as we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, David is simply pointing out that the whole idea was that the jury was to judge both the facts and the law, and this is the way it had been going back to the time of the Magna Carta. But there were people in this country who wanted to change that. You see, they wanted an authoritarian form of government. And little bit by little bit, over a period really of generations, they gradually eroded these concepts. Those who've studied, and you can go up on Wikipedia, and I suggest that you do Google in jury nullification, go to the Wikipedia article. I think it gives you a very good understanding of what this was all about and how this was gradually eroded. You must understand, ladies and gentlemen, there's a long-range plan. First of all, to change the structure of our society, to move it into an authoritarian system under an appointed or a bureaucracy, as it we have with the judges in most cases. A few of them are elected, but most are not. And then, of course, to do the same thing with the central government. And little bit by little bit, to centralize all power with a ruling elite. And, of course, we tell it we're a democracy. We elect our representatives. No, ladies and gentlemen, the people who put up the money elect the representatives. And then they buy and sell the opinions of the duly elected representatives. We no longer have representative government. We have, of course, government that is open to the highest bidder. And believe me, there are people out there with billions of dollars quite willing to reward congressmen who go along with the system. Well, before we go on, David, I'd like you to go ahead and tell our listeners about the Institute of the Constitution, how they can get in touch with you, and the information that is available through the Institute, and why the Institute is one of the most important organizations in America today.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. I agree that it is vitally important, because even this issue we're talking about here right now of jury nullification, that the jury must base their decision whether a law is lawful or unlawful on some standard. I know there is an organization very active across the country that I admire and does a great deal of work, and yet they encourage people to just make up their own standard. Basically, whatever standard they want to choose individually for themselves as a juror is fine. No, that's not what our founders said. Our founders said there is an absolute standard, the laws of nature, nature's God, and our Constitution, federal Constitution and state Constitution. So it's vitally important for every American not only to determine who they're going to vote for based upon knowledge of our Constitution, based upon an understanding of whether this candidate is actually promising to violate the law, as, by the way, the two major party candidates have given umpteen promises to violate the law before they're even elected to office. You need to understand not only at the ballot box, but especially in the jury box. You need to know the standard, the Constitution, to be able to measure the law under consideration by that standard of the Constitution to determine is it constitutional or unconstitutional, is it lawful or unlawful. We put together what we call a host kit, which is a simple way that anyone with any group anywhere can communicate these truths. Our constitutional law professor John Eisenmo in 12 half-hour lectures that are fully outlined in the student a notebook that's part of the host kit, and then two additional lectures by David Barton. All of this gives you an essential working understanding of the Declaration, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the subsequent amendments, such that you, when you serve on jury as a juror, you could take the law that is being used in this case and use it if it is lawful, that is, if it is constitutional, and you would have a standard by which to do that. Now, people can order online if they will go to our website. They can order the host kit, and our website at Institute on the Constitution is IOTConline, all one word, IOTConline.com. Right there at the top of the first page is a button you can click to order a host kit online. Or if you prefer to call in and make, place a phone order, you can call us at Institute on the Constitution toll-free at 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again at Institute on the Constitution is 866-730-9796. And it's essential, Dr. Stan, for every citizen to have a working knowledge of this. It's absolutely essential, and the only way we're going to recover our original form of government, a republic under the laws of nature and nature's God, government limited by the Constitution as it was originally intended. The only way we can get back there is first by educating millions of Americans. And so I encourage each of your listeners to get a host kit, train yourself and your family, your friends, take it to your church. And I've told people, if your pastor is a little leery about hosting or having a class on the Constitution in this church, have him call me. I'd be glad to talk to any pastor, answer his questions, his concerns, and tell him why it's not just a good idea, it is essential for him making disciples of Jesus Christ, because a disciple obeys Jesus in every area of life, including what Jesus said about the duty we owe to our civil government as Christians. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. In America means you must know the Constitution. I'd be glad to explain that to any pastor or any Christian that has questions. So our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution where people can contact us is 866-730-9796. And if people were to understand the standard and were to walk into the jury box, and if there's only 1 out of 12 jurors that understand this in that particular case, so you've got 11 people that don't understand the standard, they don't understand their job is to judge the law. If you have one juror who in the deliberation room takes the time to explain what we're walking through here in this series of radio programs, if they were to take the time and take the information and share it with the rest of the jurors, you could stop injustice, you could stop wicked, unconstitutional laws in their tracks if enough jurors across our country were to do that. And
now, David, you actually have material there at the Institute on jury nullification?
Yes, and we're in the midst of producing a course, a video course that will contain all that we're talking about here with a notebook that gives a detailed outline of each of the lectures. And basically equips a juror not just to understand this for themselves, but our ideal is they're going to walk into that jury room for the deliberation, and they're going to share what they have learned with the fellow jurors and persuade the fellow jurors that their first job is to judge the law before they even look at the facts.
And for our listeners out there, if you really want to have more information, go to certainly the Google in the word jury nullification on your computer and read the article there. Of course, the first part of this article is excellent because it tells you the background of jury nullification. Yes, the elite, the people who really would establish a dictatorship in America have eroded these concepts, but go to Wikipedia and read their article. It'll give you a good background. And then, of course, as soon as the Institute has their information, get their information. And then start using this as a vehicle of explaining to people how America has not gradually evolved into something else. It's been an organized, coordinated effort to change our system of law, to deprive us of a right to a trial by jury of our peers, and, of course, to have a judicial system that is a rubber stamp for the judicial elite who have a different agenda because in many instances they worship a different god. Go right ahead, David.
Well, that's exactly true. Well, the case we quoted in 1892 just before the break, State v. Burpee in Vermont, claimed that law judging by the jury was neither sound in principle nor salutary in practice. In other words, it wasn't a good thing and was against the weight of authority. All three of those are absolute lies. They're part of the propaganda that the judges were beginning to pour out across the country to persuade Americans that, no, juries don't have any business doing this.
I don't think it's really so interesting. As I mentioned before, when I was recently called for a jury to determine whether I could sit on the jury, and the judge instructed those of us who were there, you know, you are not to go to the law library. You are not to study the law. I will tell you what the law says. I will tell you, what you will do. You are not to make any independent decisions as far as the law. Is there anybody here who cannot abide by that? And I should have, at that time, put up my hand and said, no, I don't believe that. I think that you're incorrect, Your Honor. I believe in the right of the people to a fair trial by a jury of their peers, and I believe that the jury should have the right to judge both the facts and the aspects of the law. I just wanted to see what would happen. It was the first time I'd been called for jury duty in 50 years, but they did call me. Fortunately, I did not get on the jury. If I had, I probably would have had to tell them the truth, and that is that I believe that it is up to the jury to determine whether a person is guilty or innocent, not to the judge to shape that trial to go along with the establishment. So go right ahead.
Yes, well, very shortly after that, there was a Supreme Court case, Sparf v. United States, and this is 1895, and this is Justice Harlan that was writing this opinion, and the trial was thus conducted, and actually the case was a case of murder, questionable murder on the high seas, and whether it was murder or was an accident, all of that was, you know, there was a great deal of question about it and so forth, but the statement here is that the trial was thus conducted upon the theory that it was the duty of the court to expound the law, and that of the jury to apply the law as thus declared to the facts ascertained by them. In other words, a clear separation by this time, 1895, had taken place in American courtrooms. And he went on to say, in this separation of the functions of court and jury is found the chief value as well as safety of the jury system. So here we have the exact lie being foisted in this case by Supreme Court Justice Harlan in 1895 that basically says, the whole beauty of the jury system is that the jury does not have anything to do with judging the law whatsoever. That's the function of the judge. The jury just looks at the facts. And he goes on to say those functions cannot be confounded, that is, mixed together. The jury dare not judge the law. They cannot be confounded or disregarded without endangering the stability of public justice.
And of course, they're really not interested in public justice.
No.
They're interested in carrying out an agenda.
Yes.
And what we need is to get back to this concept of justice under God and justice under the Constitution, not justice according to a ruling elite, to an establishment elite. That is what this is really all about. So you go right ahead, David.
And, well, we'll jump almost 100 years ahead to 1962 now. I mean, there's many other cases that could illustrate this, but the point I wanted to make is that in those brief years from 1830 to to 1890, the transformation of our legal system had taken place by the judiciary illegally changing the function of the jury. And the interesting thing is that the constitutions of states, for example, here in the state of Maryland, did not change. Article 23 of our Declaration of Rights, which is basically the Bill of Rights for Maryland, Article 23 says that the jury is the judge of the law as well as the facts in all criminal cases. And it's still, even today, and here in 2008, it is still the Constitution of the state of Maryland says that, which means the Constitution is always the supreme law of the land. No matter what any judge says, it's still the supreme law of the land. Well, in this case, 1962, Giles v. State, the judge insisted that Article 23, notice what this judge insisted, Article 23 of the Maryland State Constitution, which is the supreme law of the state of Maryland, he said that Article 23 was unconstitutional. Well, wait a minute. That is the Constitution. How can you say the Constitution is unconstitutional? What kind of idiocy is this? And he gave his reasons. He said, well, Article 23 fosters the possibility that a defendant would be subject to a trial different from that given to other defendants in like circumstances and that the jury would not apply the law correctly. In other words, you can't trust the jury. You can just trust us lawyers wearing black robes. That's who you can trust. And the astonishing thing here is he claims that it's unconstitutional. And that's on the state of Maryland level. Another case went to the U.S. Supreme Court on the same issue, Article 23 of Maryland State Constitution. And in this case in 1963 is Brady v. Maryland. And the Supreme Court in this case actually recognizes the attenuation, that is, the erosion of the jury's ability to judge the law. That is, they admit there was a time in the past, in the murky distant past, before 1830, when juries did judge the law, but now we don't do that anymore, and that's a good thing that we don't do that anymore. This is kind of what the case says. And so while they recognize the attenuation of the jury's ability to judge the law, they note, this is the U.S. Supreme Court, says that the language of Article 23 of Maryland State Constitution, the language of Article 23 does not precisely mean what it seems to say. What an astonishing thing to say. They're saying the words on the page of the Maryland State Constitution do not mean what they say. They do not mean what the history of Maryland says they said when the Constitution was first written in 1776, and this article was very clearly stated, and the subsequent constitutions of Maryland all said the same thing. It doesn't say what it says. Then what does it say? Well, it says whatever the judge says that it says. And you see what the shift is there? You go from a constitutional form of government to an oligarchy of black-robed lawyers. And the law becomes whatever comes out of the mouth of that black-robed lawyer. You don't have a constitution anymore because the constitution doesn't say what it obviously says. We are in an extremely dangerous position when we have an oligarchy of black-robed lawyers. And by the way, most people, I have some friends that are lawyers that are good lawyers, but most people across America have very, very, very low respect for lawyers. And for good reason, they realize that they're not about justice, they're just about gouging people and so on. And the result of that is that most people don't respect lawyers. But what happens when you throw a black robe on a lawyer and you call him a judge? Oh, well, now we'll all respect them. Well, I don't think we should, particularly when these judges are violating the very law, the very Constitution they took an oath to uphold.
And I think it's really so interesting when you go in a courtroom and, of course, the judge comes in and, of course, everybody's asked to rise, you know, in certainly a respect to the judge. Well, of course, it used to be that when the judge came in the courtroom, he carried a Bible in his hand and the people were rising to respect the Bible and God's Word.
That's right. In fact, he held the Bible open.
Right.
So he was looking at the Bible. It wasn't a closed Bible, it was an open Bible. He was looking to the Bible and he was seeking wisdom from God's Word as to what was going to happen there in that courtroom. We have turned the entire judicial system on its head, and you know, we have these kind of statements of the Supreme Court of Maryland and the Supreme Court of the United States saying the Constitution doesn't mean what it says. Obviously what it says, and what it historically is, and they would admit, and many of these judges admit in their opinions, oh yeah, there was a day, you know, back there in the ancient past that juries did judge the law, but that wasn't a good thing, and we're much more sophisticated today, and we dare not let the juries do this. So The American people have been lied to. The American people have been propagandized, and successfully to a large degree, and our intention is to change that and to see that that is turned around. Occasionally, however, there is some honesty.
David, we're just about out of time. I want you once again to get out your webpage and to get out your telephone number so people hopefully will get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution and begin learning about this wonderful Constitution that was passed down to us from previous generations.
People can go to our website at Institute on the Constitution. And that website is iotconline.com, iotconline.com. Or they can call us toll-free at our toll-free number at Institute on the Constitution, which is 866-730-9796. That toll-free number again is 866-730-9796.
And I think it's so vitally important, ladies and gentlemen, that you learn about the Constitution, you learn about the jury system, if you hope to remain free. Well, David, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. Actually, I have to say that there are some judges who are honest and have actually expressed opinions, even late in time, contrary to the major flow. But these tend to be disregarded. They tend not to go anywhere. One such case is Justice White in a case in 1975, Taylor v. Louisiana.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away, and the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
From outside, sounds like a great meeting put on by our good friend Orlean Kula, who's written a couple of books, and you can get those through her telephone number, going into the Real ID Act, going into various issues having to do with illegal immigration. But if you'd like to think about going to Orlean's program, and it's in Northern California up in Santa Rosa, her number is 707 707-539-8393. That's 707-539-8393. And, of course, I think we'll go ahead and put in a plug at this time for our meeting, our October 26th meeting. It's the annual Radio Liberty Seminar. We're bringing in Dr. Blaylock, Joanna Michelson, Patrick Wood, and, of course, Michael Shaw will be there as well. And we really need to know if you're going to be considering coming. We hope you'll come, bring others. We'll have all sorts of books and videos and other items there, and certainly all of the guests will have their tables. But if you'd like, to come, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, get your reservation in. It's going to be a great time. We're going to be serving lunch. We have to know how many are going to be there. Then, of course, we hope that if you want to know more on the subject we've been talking about, why, you really would want to get a book written by our good friend John Stormer, Betrayed by the Bench. Betrayed by the Bench. It's the story, of course, of what they've done to undermine our First Amendment protection and twist it around 180 degrees. To take God and prayer out of our schools. But why would they want to take God and prayer out of our schools and destroy the moral fabric of our society? Well, that takes us to the subject of the Brotherhood of Darkness. If you haven't read the book or seen the DVD, because you can get it by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Because America, our future, our freedom are under attack today. And then, of course, we have a number of other books going into the background of what's happened here, America's God and Country. We have certainly the wonderful book by William Federer, America's God and Country. We recommend The Myth of Separation was a book written by certainly one of the major people who's written about this, David Barton. They've changed the name of that book, and the name escapes me right now, but if you order The Myth of Separation, why, we'll get it by the new title. It tells basically the same story of the fact that the idea of the separation of church and state was simply created by people who would destroy the moral fabric of our society. And you cannot understand what's going on unless you understand there are secret societies that want to destroy America, that want to use America's military and financial power to bring about a world government, which is why we're really fighting over there in Iraq and Afghanistan today, and why we're going to war with Iran, and why we're going to war with the Muslim world, and why we are transferring nuclear technology to Pakistan. Oh, you didn't know we were transferring the mechanism for building atomic bombs to Pakistan? You go to my website, radioliberty.com, that's radioliberty.com. Read my January 2008 newsletter on Sybil Edmonds, and there's so much more material on that today. But we're doing everything in preparation for a nuclear war. And you say, why would rational people do that? And the answer is quite simple, because we're not dealing with rational people. So let me suggest my talk on the forbidden secret and the syllabus that goes with that. Let me suggest my talk on the secret knowledge, my talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. That and so much more information is available from Radio Liberty. Go to our website, look at our various things we have there, and then begin making preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead, both materially, financially, and spiritually. And please pray for America. Pray for revival, because this is a spiritual battle. But please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion. It'll determine what the future will bring, and I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, they were going to be the views of Eli Mellor for the next hour, but he has an answering machine there on his line, and so we're going to have to... I just say that it's open lines, that we have nothing prepared. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. So give us a call, and we'd love, of course, to talk to you about any subject you'd like to talk to until Eli comes on, or maybe he's not going to come on. But, of course, Eli has a website, a very interesting website, called thetimeisnow.us, www.thetimeisnow.us. And he's written extensively about the war in the Middle East and why we're fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq. And he actually recognizes that this is a prelude to enlarging the war in the Middle East. Now, I don't know if he would... understand the things that we understand. I don't think he would understand the fact that we are in the process, and we have been for a long time now, of transferring nuclear technology and material to Pakistan so they can build nuclear weapons. But the elite cannot let the American people know that. Now, why do we know that? Well, there have been a couple of cases come up recently on this, but certainly the basic information comes from a woman named Sybil Edmonds, who worked for the FBI, went to work for the FBI shortly after the September 11th attack in 2001. And she was, of course, a translator. She spoke both Turkish and, I believe, Farsi. And she was able then to listen to other recorded telephone calls, which had not been interpreted. And in the process of working for the FBI, she discovered that there was a spy ring. Part of it was right there in her own office. There was a woman who worked there, who, of course, was having an affair with a Turkish businessman, and she was interpreting his material, and she was just lying to the FBI and concealing the fact that this man was part of a spy ring that was working at the highest level of the American State Department and was actually in the process of transferring nuclear technology to the Pakistanis. Well, of course, Sybil Edmonds was quite upset about this. There were a lot of other things she learned, but she wanted to come forward and tell the truth about this. She reported it to her superiors. She even reported that she was actually trying to recruit her into this this spy ring that was operating at the highest levels of our State Department, and she refused to join. But the interesting thing was that the FBI refused to do anything about it. Oh, they did eventually let the woman go, but they have been actually investigating the same spy ring, and they were ordered by the Justice Department to stop investigating the spy ring that was transferring nuclear technology and information to Mr. Khan in Pakistan, who has built probably several hundred nuclear bombs. And my fear, of course, those nuclear bombs are going to be used in the coming nuclear war in the Middle East. And people say that doesn't make sense. Why would the State Department know that there was a spy ring operating and somebody would put orders in? The FBI wasn't to be allowed to do anything. And the truth of the matter is there really are people who want a nuclear war. And you say that's not logical? And of course it's not logical. We're not dealing with logical people. And there's some information recently, I believe it was in... we can get it for anybody who wants to. I think it was in Harper's, but I could be wrong, where actually this man had interviewed the people in the FBI, and he said, "We know what Sybil Edmonds is saying is true, but we're not allowed to say anything at all about it." Well, our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295, and we'd be glad to get your input on these subjects. We hope that you're out there listening and that you give us a call, because we have nothing prepared, and it's unfortunate, but apparently our guest is...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101. I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.